Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. The phenomenon of Percy Jackson and the Olympians started in 2005 with just one book, The Lightning Thief. And boy, did it catch on. Now Percy Jackson is a best-selling five-book children's series, a blockbuster Hollywood movie. And author Rick Riordan might as well be a god for millions of young adult readers. We'll talk to Rick Riordan about Percy Jackson and what's coming up next. This hour on Point, best-selling author Rick Riordan. You can join the conversation. Have you read Percy Jackson and the Olympians? Have your kids? What do you think? What do they think? And what's your review of the movie? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from San Antonio, Texas, is Rick Riordan, author of the Percy Jackson and the Olympians series for children and the Trace Navarre mystery series for adults. Until a few years ago, he taught middle school English and history in California and Texas. On May 4th, his new book, The Red Pyramid, will be released. It's the first in a hotly anticipated Egyptian mythology series called The Cain Chronicles. And in September, he's out with another new series. This series, a continuation of Percy Jackson. Rick Riordan, welcome to On Point. How do you have time to do this interview with all these things you have going on?
Fair question. Thanks, Jane. It's good to be here.
Thank you.
I've been keeping busy. I think that's safe to say.
Well, you once said Percy Jackson was born out of desperation. It's a great story. I wish you'd tell us how you came up with the character.
It's true. It really was a case of needing a story off the top of my head for my son. He was in second grade at the time, struggling with reading, with homework, having a terrible time with school. We didn't know what was going on until we got him tested, and he turned out to be ADHD and dyslexic. And as a teacher myself, I'd worked with those conditions many times, but when it's your own son, it's a little bit different. I tried to keep him involved with school. I tried to look for anything he was enjoying, and it turned out the one thing that he did love to read in school was Greek mythology, one of my all-time favorites. So I began to tell him stories to keep him interested, bedtime stories at home, Hercules, Jason and the Argonauts. And when I ran out, he asked me to make up a new one. And I thought about the struggles that he was going through with ADHD and dyslexia, and I decided maybe mythology could help me out in the way it's always been used to explain things that are very difficult to explain. And so I made up a new Greek demigod, Percy Jackson, who discovers that his learning differences are actually a sign that you might be very special indeed. You might have Olympian blood.
So tell us more about this unlikely superhero, Percy Jackson, and briefly the Percy Jackson plotline.
Well, Percy Jackson, he starts The Lightning Thief, the first book, a 12-year-old boy. He has a very rough time in school. He's been kicked out of every school he's ever gone to. It's never his fault. Just things happen. He gets in trouble. Monsters attack. Strange things occur to him. It's never made sense to him until he's 12, and he learns that the reason he's having so much trouble is because the Greek gods are still around, still having liaisons with mortals from time to time and having children that are half god, half mortal, like Hercules, like Perseus. Percy Jackson is one of them. He is a son of the Greek gods, and because of that, his life is going to be very difficult. And in The Lightning Thief, he has to go on a quest, like all heroes do. A lightning bolt has been stolen from the god Zeus. Percy has to find it in modern-day America and return it to the Empire State Building, which is, of course, where the Mount Olympus headquarters of the gods hovers today.
And Percy Jackson, like your son, Haley, has ADHD, which makes it hard to sit in the classroom but keeps him alive on the battlefield, doesn't it?
That's right. We think of ADHD as a positive. Of course, as anyone with ADHD knows, it doesn't mean that you can't pay attention. It means that you pay attention to everything.
Right.
If there's something more interesting going on out the window than your teacher's lecture, well, you're going to focus in on that. So on a battlefield, that may very well keep you alive. And the same with his dyslexia. Dyslexia is a very difficult condition. It makes it hard to process the written word. And I explain that for demigods, being the fact that your brain is hardwired for ancient Greek. So, of course, the English language is a little bit difficult. It's a little bit of a challenge for you. But it's all a sign that you really do have something special going for you. It's very much a good thing and not a disability.
So in the beginning, when you first started telling your son the story of Percy Jackson, beyond the fact that Haley related so much to this character, what was it about your stories that reached your son? What was it about Percy?
I think what Haley will tell you is that he likes Percy because Percy is not a perfect character doing perfect things in a perfect world. He's a normal, flawed kid with problems that he could relate to, not the greatest student in the world, does have a lot of difficulties, all the normal stuff like worrying about girls and worrying about how his parents feel about him and where is his dad that he's never met, and things that a lot of kids can relate to. He also has this problem of thinking that maybe his teachers really are monsters and they're out to get him. And it turns out in Percy's case, this is absolutely true. I think that struck a chord for Haley. And also I tried to make Percy like a lot of kids that I've taught over the years. I tried to cater it very much to middle school sensibilities. Mm. I think my teaching background helped in that. I sort of have a pretty good idea of what kids find interesting, what they find funny, and what they find boring. And that's the stuff that I try to avoid.
I was going to ask you about that. In being the middle school teacher, did you see this similar interest in Greek mythology among your students?
Absolutely. It's something that I enjoy teaching every year. I've taught both social studies and English, and Greek mythology is just a winner in the classroom. If it's done at all well, it is the students' favorite unit of the year. I think Greek gods really are our first superheroes. They have so much that appeals to kids. They're powerful, and yet at the same time, they're very flawed and very human and very accessible. And I think the mixture really appeals to young readers especially. Plus, the stories are just great. They have mystery, magic, romance, monsters, villains, heroes, a dire quest, everything you could want in a good story.
Read to us a bit of the story from The Lightning Thief, would you please? Rick Riordan?
Absolutely. This is from the first chapter. Percy is on a field trip to the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, and his pre-algebra teacher pulls him aside after he's gotten in trouble. Mrs. Dodds stood with her arms crossed in front of a big marble frieze of the Greek gods. She was making this weird noise in her throat, like growling. "You've been giving us problems, honey," she said. I did the safe thing. I said, "Yes, ma'am." She tugged on the cuffs of her leather jacket. "Did you really think you would get away with it?" The look in her eyes was beyond mad. It was evil. "She's a teacher," I thought nervously. "It's not like she's going to hurt me." I said, I'll try harder, ma'am." Thunder shook the building. "We're not fools, Percy Jackson," Mrs. Dodds said. "It was only a matter of time before we found you out. Confess, and you'll suffer less pain." I didn't know what she was talking about. All I could think of was the teachers must have found the illegal stash of candy I'd been selling out of my dorm room. Or maybe they'd realized I got my essay on Tom Sawyer from the internet without ever reading the book, and now they were going to take away the grade. Or worse, they'd make me read the book. "Well," she demanded. "Ma'am, I don't..." "Your time is up," she hissed. Then the weirdest thing happened. Her eyes began to glow like barbecue coals. Her fingers stretched, turning into talons. Her jacket melted into large, leathery wings. She wasn't human. She was a shriveled hag with bat wings and claws and a mouthful of yellow fangs. And she was about to slice me to ribbons.
I can see why your storytelling was so engaging to your son and now to millions of children. Is there something that we lose when we've lost that oral storytelling history? I mean, when we lose that bedtime, you know, storytelling, mom and dad to their kids, is that something that you prized in your home?
Oh, absolutely. It's been part of my upbringing. When I was growing up as a child, my parents would tell me stories. My grandfather would tell me stories of family history, and he would draw pictures for me. And so I definitely had that in my background. And it's, of course, part of Greek mythology as well. All of the old stories were not written down for centuries, and they changed over time. And every teller of the stories would put his or her own flair into it. And the stories of Homer, these started out as oral storytelling. So it definitely is a tradition, and it makes it very rich to have it be something very personal that you pass down from one generation to the next. Certainly, storytelling for my son was important in the classroom, too. I had a reputation as a storyteller. So it's something that's very dynamic and makes the book very engaging. I always tell parents, you're never, ever too old to be read to. Always read with your kids. It's a very powerful family experience.
Well, your first book had no marketing campaign. By your fourth book, there was a 1.2 million first edition printing. I know so much of this success was by word of mouth, by your young readers. And I'm curious, your life has clearly changed because of Percy Jackson. How has your son's life changed since the book, the books and now the movie?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to watch both of my sons. Haley was the one who heard the story first, but Patrick, my younger son, who's now 11, both of them have really grown up with Percy Jackson. And so it's been interesting watching the character and my son sort of dovetail as they grow up into maturity. I think most of the time they're very proud. They feel very empowered that this story that started as a family experience has become so popular and affected so many other people. Many students write me that have the same struggles that my older son had and say, you know, this really changed things for me. It turned me into a reader. It helped me to wear my learning differences as a badge of honor rather than a stigma that I was ashamed of. So my sons are proud of that. There are certain days, being in the teenage years, that they're embarrassed, you know, just like anyone is. Oh, Dad, you know, when somebody gives them a book and asks them to take it home for me to sign, that can embarrass them a little bit. Much to my surprise, Haley came in the other day and said, "Hey, Dad, I'm working on a manuscript, and it's longer than your longest manuscript. I did a word count. So I think I may need to start subcontracting some work to this kid."
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. I'm joined today from San Antonio, Texas, by Rick Riordan, best-selling author of Percy Jackson and the Olympians. On May 4th, his new book, The Red Pyramid, will be released. It's the first in his new series on Egyptian mythology called The Cain Chronicles. In September, he's out with another book, the first in a continuation of the Percy Jackson series. I want to play a clip from the movie here. This is the scene from the movie that we just heard Rick read from the book. On a class trip to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, Percy Jackson, played by Logan Lerman, his wheelchair-bound teacher, Mr. Bruner, played by Pierce Brosnan, talks to the kids about the Olympian gods. And at this point, Percy's math teacher, Mrs. Dodds, played by Maria Olson, takes Percy into a separate room and tries to attack him.
There are 12 Olympian gods. The big three are the brothers Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. On several occasions, they would come down to Earth and
hook up.
They would hook up with mortals. The children of these unions were half god, half human.
Percy.
Yes, Miss Dodds.
We need to talk.
So, did I do something wrong?
Where is it?
Whoa! How did you get up there?
And then Mrs. Dodds morphs into a swooping fury, which threw me into my seat in the theater, I will tell you, Rick Riordan. Is there a moral to your stories, would you say?
You know, I don't think in terms of morals when I'm writing it. I do think in terms of issues that kids might care about and might find relevant. I think that's always the trick when you're taking very old stories and adapting them for modern kids. I think one has to look for the reasons that they'll still be relevant. That certainly was my philosophy in the classroom. I never wanted a kid to look up and say, "Why am I learning this?" Because I know that as a student, I said that quite often. So when I was writing the story of the Lightning Thief, I tried to be conscious of making a story that would appeal to kids. What are the common elements? What are the universals? One of those is, where do you fit in with your family? How do you become an adult? How do your parents see you? And Are you shaped by who your parents are? If you find out that your father is in fact a Greek god, what does that do to your self-esteem? How does that affect who you will be in the future? And do you have any control over that? So those are the sorts of questions that I was interested in exploring. I don't have a necessary moral or an answer, but it's a fascinating subject to ponder.
Complicated family structures are not just a modern invention. It's alive in Greek mythology, too.
Oh, right? Yes, indeed, yeah.
So, Rick Riordan, I have calls lined up down the street. Let me get a few of them in here. First from Reading, Massachusetts, Duncan is calling. Hi, Duncan. You're on with Rick Riordan.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Duncan.
So, I was in third grade, and I just kept reading Greek, like, reference books and stuff. And my teacher told me I had to start reading stories. Well, my other friend was reading The Lightning Thief, and when it was required reading in fifth grade, I thought it was a perfect time to start reading it. So I began to read it, and I just got hooked on it, and I never liked reading before, and now after I read it, I just couldn't stop it.
Ah, that's wonderful. Oh, you've read
awesome,
the whole series?
Duncan.
You read the whole series? Yeah. How old are you?
I am 13.
Excellent. Rick, do you have a comment for Duncan?
Hey, that's great, Duncan. It sounds like you were already an expert on Greek mythology before you found the series, so that is so cool. Do you have a favorite book in the series?
I like the second one because in sixth grade we were reading The Odyssey, and they kind of matched up in many ways.
Well, Duncan,
yeah, it sure does.
Thank you so much for your call. Keep on reading. Here's another comment from our website, onpointradio.org. My name is Matilda. I'm 12 years old. I really enjoy your books and was wondering if you liked to write as a child, and what did you enjoy reading when you were my age? A question for you, Rick Riordan.
Matilda, great questions. You know, it's funny. I was a reluctant reader when I was in elementary school. I was one of those kids you had to drag to the library, and I didn't really think I liked books. But I did like it when my parents told me stories. That was okay. Then later on, when I was in middle school, I had a really great teacher who kind of got me interested in mythology, and it really was the first thing that I started reading for fun. Then I discovered The Lord of the Rings. That was the first series that I read like 14 times, and I just couldn't get enough of it, and that got me into fantasy. At that point, I did decide that I wanted to write, but back then, everything that I tried to write sounded just like The Lord of the Rings. So it took me a while to find something that I did want to write about, and it took me a long time to realize maybe I should go back to those old myths and make stories that are modern out of them.
Here's another call from Buffalo, New York. Rita is on the line. Hi, Rita. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
And hi, Rick. Well, I'm not a child. I'm an aunt, and I have many nieces and nephews, and I gave my fifth-grade nephew The Lightning Thief when it first came out. It was his first hardcover. He told his mother, I have no idea how I'm going to read this book. She said, read it one chapter at a time, and then they couldn't take it away from him. So that
oh,
was
fantastic.
And then he got all of his jock friends to read it. Everyone on the baseball team was reading it. So it was a great success. And then I decided I had to read it. And by the way, I'm very involved in some reform movements in the Catholic Church. And what it did for me was I realized that how much more wonderful it is to know we have a loving God, or I have a loving God, you know, depending on your beliefs, and how significant, you know, Jesus' messages were compared to these crazy, unpredictable, and vindictive, also fun and sometimes nice gods, but also pretty unpredictable. So that's my thought for the day.
Rita, thank you. Rick?
You bet. Yeah, absolutely. People sometimes ask, do you actually believe in those gods? I'm like, oh, no. I mean, that is too frightening to even consider. They're a lot of fun to write about, but yeah, I'm glad my fate is not in their hands. And, it's true. The sort of this uneasy mix between the Greco-Roman tradition and Christianity, the Judeo-Christian tradition, I mean, that is the oldest root of Western civilization. We've had this uneasy relationship between these two strands of our civilization since the very beginning, since St. Augustine was writing about these. So it's by no means a new thing in our society.
There are many people, Rick Riordan, who say that your character Percy Jackson carries more than a passing similarity to another boy wizard, Harry Potter. Did you model Percy Jackson in any way after Harry Potter?
Well, I don't. It's not such a direct cause and effect. Let me say this: I was aware of Harry Potter, certainly, and as a teacher, I had never seen anything ignite students' interest in reading like the Harry Potter series. And I love the Harry Potter series. I completely understand why it took off the way it was. Also, I would say that all fantasy writers that came after Harry Potter owe J.K. Rowling a great debt, because she opened the door for a lot of us and made publishers see that there really was a market for a young adult fantasy in particular. And of course, any fantasy that comes after Harry Potter naturally is going to be compared to Harry Potter. It's become sort of the gold standard. Did I model it after Harry Potter? No, but I was aware that I was drawing from the same well. J.K. Rowling is going back to archetypes that are not new. The idea of a boy who discovers that his parents are not who he thought, that they have special powers, that he has powers, and he has to come into his inheritance and fight a great evil, go to a trainer and learn how to use his powers. Well, yes, that's Harry Potter. Yes, it's Percy Jackson. It's also Hercules. It's also Perseus. It's also Jason and the Argonauts. So it's a very, very old archetype, and I think Harry Potter today is the best known example of that, but it certainly didn't begin with Harry Potter. Mm.
Here's another call for you. One of our listeners in Barrington, Rhode Island, Heba, is on the line. Hi, Heba. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. How are you? How old are you?
Hey, Heba.
Oh, I'm 15.
Ah, have you read the Percy Jackson series?
Oh, yes, I love this series. I heard about it from my science teacher in eighth grade, actually, and I love Greek mythology already, so I started reading them. And then my brother started reading them, too, and his friend is here, too, and he read them, too. And yesterday we went and saw the movie, and we loved it. But we have a question for Mr. Riordan. We noticed such, like, enormous changes in the plot. How do you feel about that?
Heba, thanks.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people. I have to be honest here now, Heba. I haven't seen the movie yet. I have been under deadline, and so I've been kind of keeping my head down and just buried in a manuscript. And I know that there are changes. You know, the thing is, it's always tricky when you take a book and you make it into a movie. I wasn't involved. It's sort of one of those things you kind of turn it over to Hollywood and, you know, you cross your fingers. but it's a very different medium, and I know that they have to make changes when they turn a book into a movie, just because movies are so much shorter. And if they tried to do, you know, a page by page carbon copy of the book on the screen, it would be like 16 hours long. So I can't really address specifics, because honestly, I haven't seen it.
Were you worried in some regard about your books being made into a movie?
Well, I mean, it's a great honor. I mean, not many books even get to that point. And so, yes, of course, it's a little nerve-wracking. It sort of reminded me of when my mom was teaching me to drive when I was 15. And I remember her sitting in the passenger seat, with her fingernails dug in the dashboard, trying not to say anything as I took the wheel for the first time. That's kind of the way you feel when you turn your book over to Hollywood. It's like, don't crash us. but on this, at the same hand, you know, you have to sort of give over control, I mean, and sort of trust that they're going to make a movie that works as a movie. I've heard a whole spectrum of comments about the movie. It seems like most people, if they're willing to kind of let it be its own thing and not worry too much that it's not exactly the book, they enjoy it. Even my sons went to see it, and they were worried. You know, they know the stories better than anybody. But they came back and they said, yeah, Dad, you know, it wasn't that bad. It was a pretty good movie.
Hmm. Here's a call now from Charleston, South Carolina. Kevin is on the line. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Hi, Rick. How are you all?
Good.
Hi, Kevin.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm calling because I'm a school administrator, and in the middle school in which I work, we've actually asked all of our sixth graders to read The Lightning Thief. And, you know, I'm also one of those, I guess, I don't want to say former or ex, but lover of Greek mythology. And I think the reason why I love this so much is I ended up becoming an artist, and growing up, the one thing that boys love to do is create superheroes. And I think with Greek mythology, you could see all of the different gods and their different powers, and you almost could imagine what it would be like for this god to have a battle with this god, and you kind of just imagine what all of it looks like. And that's the reason I loved it. And I think it kind of took away just the trying to memorize things. It created a vision for me, and that's, I think it just kind of became something that I love to do, and hopefully my son, as he grows up, will love it as well, and I do plan on seeing The Lightning Thief. Hmm.
Well, that's wonderful. I hope your students enjoy the book, and I appreciate you sharing it with them. And I totally agree with you. They are our first superheroes, the Greek gods. And sort of, you know, if a novel kind of puts life under a microscope, then mythology sort of blows it up to billboard size. It makes everything bigger than it really is. And they're fascinating characters.
Rick Riordan, you had great success in the adult mystery market. How did you transition to children's literature, and how is writing for children different from writing for an older audience?
It was funny. I told stories in the classroom for years, and I began writing adult mystery novels because that was what I was reading. And when my students would learn about this, they would say, well, why aren't you writing for us? Why don't you write something for our age group? We are obviously the audience you know best. And it took me a long time to realize that they were probably right. That probably was the audience that I knew best. And it really was my son, when he wanted that story of Percy Jackson, that precipitated the whole process. But I never sat down and said, I'm going to become a children's author. That really was not something that was conscious to me. It just kind of developed. In terms of how it's different, I would say, actually, writing for kids is harder because kids are a more discerning audience. They will not stay with you if you give them three pages of extraneous information that they don't care about. They want you to get to the point. They want to be hooked right away, have characters they care about. They want humor. They want action. They want a plot that makes sense. And, you know, adults want that too, but I think adults will stay with you. They'll be a little more patient. Kids will let you know right away if you're straying off the path, and they will not keep reading if you don't keep them engaged.
Mm. Here's Mandy calling from Cape Coral, Florida. Hi, Mandy. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I volunteer for an elementary school media center, and I just wanted to call and let you know that we cannot keep your books on our shelves.
Thank you.
They fly like hotcakes. We check out more books about Percy Jackson than we do check out from Mary Pope Osborne and J.K. Rowling combined.
Wow, that's pretty tough competition.
I think the series is phenomenal, and the fact that you actually work things into the books that they can use in other classes when they begin to talk about Greek mythology, the character names won't be so foreign to them, and they out without knowing that they are learning about them from the Percy Jackson books, they already know who these people are and their roles together. I think it's phenomenal. I think it's wonderful, and I can't wait for your new book.
Well, thank you. Well, tell your students I said hi, and I'm glad. Usually they don't get in trouble in other classes. I do have math and science teachers write me occasionally and say, I couldn't get them to pay attention to algebra because they all had the Percy Jackson books behind their algebra books, but... You know,
you may get letters from teachers. You also get an enormous amount of mail, I've read, from parents and kids, especially those with disabilities, as you write about in the book. What do your stories specifically mean to them, do you think?
That's probably my favorite part about being an author, is it lets me in some way feel like I'm still in the classroom, still a teacher. And that wasn't a job that I was anxious to give up. I really felt like teaching was my calling. But when I get a letter from a parent saying, I was told that because my child was dyslexic, she would never read, and now she can't stop reading the Percy Jackson series. Or when I get a note from a teacher saying, my class just wasn't going anywhere this year, and then we read The Lightning Thief together, and it turned everything around. Or a student that says, I didn't like books until I found Percy Jackson. Well, the teacher part of me, I mean, I couldn't ask for better feedback than that. That is gold for me. So it always makes my day when I read a letter like that.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook. Rick Riordan joins me today from San Antonio, Texas. He's author of the Percy Jackson series for children and the Trace Noir mystery series for adults. Previously, he taught middle school English and history in California and Texas. And on May 4th, his new book, The Red Pyramid, will be released. It's the first in his new Egyptian mythology series called The Cain Chronicles. Let's go back to the phones. From Bellingham, Massachusetts, Dominic is on the line. Hi, Dominic. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. How old are you? 10. Excellent. Have you read Percy Jackson?
I've read The Lightning Thief, and I'm on the second one.
I see. And
awesome.
What did you think?
They're really awesome.
And what's your question for Mr. Riordan today?
What is the new kid series that's coming out?
Yeah, Dominique, I'm glad you asked. I got two that I'm working on. The one that Jane mentioned, the Red Pyramid, that's about Egyptian mythology. It's kind of like Percy Jackson in that it happens in modern day, and it's about a brother and sister, Carter and Sadie Kane, who find out that the Egyptian gods have been unleashed in the modern world, and they are the only ones that can put things back to order again. So that's the Red Pyramid. That'll be out in May. And then I'm working right now on a new Camp Half-Blood series that takes place in Percy Jackson's world. And some of the characters from that series will be in there, and there will also be some new demigod characters kind of mixing things together. And that book, it doesn't have a title yet, but that one will be out in the fall, probably in October.
Read to us a bit, Rick Riordan, from the Kane Chronicles, would you? The Red Pyramid?
Sure, this is the very beginning, the first chapter of the Red Pyramid called A Death at the Needle. We only have a few hours, so listen carefully. If you're hearing this story, you're already in danger. Sadie and I might be your only chance. Go to the school. Find the locker. I won't tell you which school or which locker, because if you're the right person, you'll find it. The combination is 13, 32, 33. By the time you finish listening, you'll know what those numbers mean. Just remember, the story we're about to tell you isn't complete yet. How it ends will depend on you. The most important thing when you open the package and find what's inside, don't keep it longer than a week. Sure, it'll be tempting. I mean, it'll grant you almost unlimited power. But if you possess it too long, it will consume you. Learn its secrets quickly and pass it on. Hide it for the next person, the way Sadie and I did for you. And then be prepared for your life to get very interesting. Okay, Sadie's telling me to stop stalling and get on with the story. Fine. I guess it started in London, the night our dad blew up the British Museum.
Why dive into Egyptian mythology, Rick Riordan? Does it have the same allure as Greek mythology?
Actually, as I went around the country talking to kids, one of their top questions for me was, are you ever going to do another mythology besides Greek and Roman? And as I thought about that, it occurred to me before, but I started thinking that really there was only one unit that I taught as a teacher that was more popular than Greece and Rome, and that was Egypt. Ancient Egypt is so fascinating, and it's one of those units that kids tend to remember from their elementary school days, the mummies, the pyramids, the Sphinx, King Tut's tomb, hieroglyphs, so much cool stuff. The mythology itself is probably not as well known, those old gods and goddesses. We don't know as much about them as we do the Greeks, but they're every bit as fascinating. And so my challenge with the Red Pyramid was to give it a Percy Jackson treatment and make it modern, dust the dust off the old stories, put them into the modern world, have some fun with it, inject a lot of humor and action, and see what I could come up with. And I have to say, I had so much fun with this book. I hope the readers enjoy it as much as I enjoyed writing it, because it was a blast.
How do you do your research, Rick? Do you travel to Egypt? Do you go to Greece? What do you do?
It's funny. I had never been to Greece until I finished the Percy Jackson series, which was kind of ironic. But I don't think it's a requirement for knowing a lot about Greek mythology. Greek mythology is very universal. You don't have to go to Greece to appreciate it, although, of course, that helps. It's also all around us. It's in our literature. It's in our art. It's on the Cartoon Network. I mean, my kids are watching cartoons, and I'm saying, hey, look, it's Eris, the goddess of discord, and there they're going to the underworld. There's the River Styx. It's everywhere. And the more you know about it, the more you see it. I think the same is true of Egypt. You know, why is there a pyramid on our dollar bill? Why is the Washington Monument an obelisk? It's everywhere, and if you look for it and you know what it means, it's fascinating. So, I had a lot of fun. And a lot of my research came from my own background as a history teacher, my own readings, and then as I got into it, reading more and more, I discovered some things about ancient Egypt that, frankly, were so amazing, I couldn't believe that no one had used them before for a children's fantasy. Fascinating stuff, but I can't give too much away.
Here's Jack from Marlborough, Connecticut. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, how old are you?
Hey, Jack.
I'm 11.
I see. Then what would you like to say today?
I'd like to say that I am a huge fan of the Percy Jackson series, and I plan on seeing the movie Saturday or Sunday. And I just was amazed how well the books were made, and I recommend them to anyone. And what I think kids, what they really like about it is that it can relate to them, because I know several people in my grade have ADHD, and then when they read these, they like them more because they can relate to Percy.
Jack, thank you very much for your call. Rick?
Thanks, Jack. That means a lot to me. You're the same age as my son, Patrick. I'm really glad to hear you've enjoyed the books, and I hope you liked the movie, too. My son did, so hopefully you will, too.
Here's another call from Jen. She's in Amesbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Jen.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, well, go ahead.
I am a ninth grade English teacher, and I also have a 12-year-old daughter, Megan, who is a huge fan of Percy Jackson. Her friend Jill is with us, too, and we're very excited to hear you on the radio. My question is, I'm wondering if you ever get criticism from English teachers about sort of reworking the mythology at all. I personally do not have that criticism. I love the books, and I think it gets kids very engaged and excited about mythology, but I'm curious.
Jen, thank you.
Yeah, it's a great question. Not very often. Occasionally, I'll get a question from a student saying, "Well, I heard it this way. I heard that Hephaestus got thrown off Mount Olympus by Zeus, and you said it was Hera." And you know, differences like that, reworkings like that, is simply a matter of what version you read. You know, as we were talking about, it's the oral tradition, and there are 12 or 13 versions of every myth. And so that makes it easy for me, because I don't have to make up anything. I try to be fairly accurate to the original sources, but I can pick whichever primary source I want and whichever one seems to be the most interesting and fit the best with my story arc. In terms of modernizing the myths, no, really no one has objected to that. I think that, if anything, the Percy Jackson series, I hope, has been a doorway into Homer, into the original stories. I've heard a lot of high school teachers say that they use the Lightning Thief kind of as an access point before they start reading the Odyssey or the Iliad, because it gives the kids a very kid-friendly frame of reference for the things that they want to talk about.
You mentioned the Iliad and the Odyssey. I'm just curious, with book series like Harry Potter and your tremendously successful Percy Jackson series, I mean, what does it take to interest kids in reading now? I mean, do you worry that kids will only be engaged by fire-breathing monsters and Zeus's lightning bolt? I mean, is that a concern?
I don't see that as a concern, really. I do think that an author should be mindful of his or her audience and have a sense of audience in mind. I mean, certainly when we teach kids about writing, that's one of the things we try to impress upon them, is that you need to be conscious of who you are writing to. Who is your audience here? As a teacher, I try to craft a story as if I'm reading it aloud to my own fifth period class after lunch. And any teacher will tell you that's a pretty tough sell. If you can keep a classroom's attention fifth period after lunch, you're on to something. Now, does that mean you have to have fire-breathing monsters in every chapter? No, not necessarily. I think it does mean that you always have to give kids a clear sense of why they're reading and why they should turn the next page, whether it's interest in the characters, whether it's an emotional dilemma, whether it's a plot point that needs to be revealed. They have to have a sense that they're not reading this for nothing. The same way we teach them to write. You shouldn't feel like you're writing for no one and writing in a vacuum. You should feel a sense of ownership of what you write.
Back to the phones, to Brookline, Massachusetts. Sam is on the line. Hi, Sam.
Hey. When I was little, my mom read me Greek mythology bedtime stories.
Yes.
And then the Percy Jackson series came out, and I wanted to read that. And I really like the creativity of how he mixed real-world modern-day life with Greek mythology. Like in the first book, they went, Percy and his Annabeth and Grover went to this woman's house, and she had all these stone statues in front. and it turned out it was Medusa, and those stone statues looked like gnomes, but they were just real people.
That was my favorite part of the movie, Sam, actually. Thanks so much for calling, my friend. Good luck and keep reading. That seems to be a common theme, Rick, right? Transferring these real-world lessons from mythological times.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I'm glad you liked that scene because that was one of my favorite ones to write, too. And I'm glad that's in the movie as well. I heard that a lot of people like that. It is a lot of fun to figure out where to place these old stories in modern America. When I was writing The Lightning Thief, I just picked places that my son had been to. Our family had gone on vacation at one point or another. So he could imagine St. Louis and Denver and Las Vegas because we'd been there at one point or another.
Here's Melanie in Nashua, New Hampshire. Hi, Melanie. Welcome.
Hi, it's a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you.
I am a former middle school English teacher, and now I teach college writing. And what I have found these books, particularly because my 9-year-old son is addicted to them, is just the purity of learning that comes out of them and how story really excites us to learn. And the funniest part for us was when we asked my son to tell us about the story and what he was learning, how he described the different gods, having never heard of them before. He was talking about Hades and Zeus and Poseidon, and we were cracking up just at the purity of never having heard the names, never having heard them spoken out loud. He was able to talk about them, even though his pronunciation of them was off.
There's some real learning going on. Melanie, thank you very much. Here's Samantha. She's calling from Augusta, Georgia. Hi, Samantha. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, I was never a big fan of learning as a child, and I'm 25 years old now, and I didn't get into reading big until Harry Potter came out, and I was a huge fan, and then I picked up the Aragon series, and since then I haven't been able to stop reading, and to be honest, I just started the Percy Jackson series. I just started the first book, and I am in love with it, and I just wanted to thank you, Rick, because I think that people like you and Rowling are, you know, the opening for our youth today. Y'all helped me as an adult love to read. And it's just amazing. Y'all just open up whole new worlds for these kids.
And that's a nice compliment.
Well, thank you. That's a great honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Samantha. Here's one more call from Bruce in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Hi, Bruce. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, it was great to hear the author. I especially enjoyed when he spoke about the oral tradition. I'm a school teacher also. And one of the things I find kids really enjoy is listening to the story and then how excited they are about getting the book themselves. My own daughter has really been enjoying the Percy Jackson series. And what I wanted to ask the author is it ever in his itinerary to go to schools and to read to kids some of his work?
Bruce, thanks. Rick?
Yeah, actually, the last 4 years, I have been crisscrossing the country fairly relentlessly. I think last year I visited 85 schools during the course of the school year, and it finally got to the point where my family wasn't seeing me anymore, and I wasn't getting my writing done, and I said, you know, I really need to take a hiatus. This is not good for me. It's not good for my family. So this school year has been the first time that I haven't been visiting schools for the past several years. And so, yeah, I do miss that. I do miss getting into the classrooms as much as I was able to do before. But, you know, it's nice to be able to be home and be dad for a while and to get my writing done. My editor is much happier now, too.
All this writing and all your success, any desire to actually go back and teach, not just read to the kids in class?
I love teaching. I really do. And I don't know that I will ever be teaching in the same capacity as a classroom teacher. I don't know. It certainly is not something that would make me unhappy at all. But I take solace in the idea that I'm still a teacher. It's just that now I have millions of kids in my classroom rather than 20 or 30.
Well, you stopped short earlier of giving us any little nuggets of the next Olympians series, which is set for fall publication. So I'll put you on the spot one last time with about a minute left here. Can you give us a little preview?
Well, I can tell you that it'll be probably a 5-book series. You will see many of the characters that you met. There are some major, pleasant, I hope, surprises in store for the readers. And I don't want anyone to feel sad that it's the end of Percy's story. That's not exactly true, but it is a major twist, and there will be major new characters in place. So stay tuned. I get, like Percy, very ADHD when I talk about it. I'm just fidgeting with excitement, but it's too early to say anything.
Rick Riordan is the best-selling author of the children's series series Percy Jackson and the Olympians. On May 4th, his new book, The Red Pyramid, will be released. It's the first in the Cain Chronicles, which is a new series focused on Egyptian mythology. And as Rick mentioned, all you Percy Jackson's fans will have this autumn to look forward to the debut of the new series, continuation of Percy Jackson. Rick, thank you very much. It's such a pleasure speaking with you, and thanks for your great work.
Thank you, Jay.
You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.